The following program is being brought to you on the Voice America Health and Wellness Channel. For more information about our network and to check our additional show hosts and topics of interest, please visit voiceamericahealth.com. The Voice America Talk Radio Network is the worldwide leader in live internet talk radio. Visit voiceamerica.com. The views and ideas expressed on the following program are strictly those of the host or guests and do not necessarily reflect the views and ideas held by the Voice America Talk Radio Network, its staff, and management. Welcome to Breakthrough with your host, Michael Pipich. We'll tackle the central psychological issues of modern life, and we'll help you find insight and solutions in nearly every relationship in your life, bringing you discussions and perspectives that you're not likely to find anywhere else. Now, here's Michael Pipich.
In the emotional roller coaster ride of bipolar disorder, people afflicted with the disease can go from feeling a wondrous sense of elation, creativity, and unrestrained love and ambition to fits of agitation, irritability, and rage, to a deep pit of despair and self-destruction. The whole range of feelings can become so intense that bipolar persons can lose any previous ability to gauge their own social or and moral behavior, to the point that people around them won't even recognize who they've become. Like all roller coasters, the first sensations of rising and falling can be exhilarating. But eventually, the inability to get off that ride, catch your breath, and reestablish what most people would call a normal life becomes physically and mentally exhausting. Then soon enough, you're trapped. Bipolar people in this stage may look for any number of ways out. They may become overly involved in all kinds of distractions or self-medicate with alcohol and drugs. They may resort to the denial of their problem or to a fight-or-flight response. Or worst of all, they may see no way out but to take their own life. Through the wild range of emotions, choices, and shifting beliefs about themselves and the world around them, there's often one set of feelings that remain constant in bipolar people: the feelings of being misunderstood, isolated, and alone. Their false beliefs, once driven by mood swings, now become more of their reality as they and the people around them strain to understand what is happening and what is supposed to be done to make this problem go away. So to bipolar people and their loved ones, the first step towards hope is to know you are not alone. There are people everywhere who suffer from this illness and struggle to get answers. Together and unified, a network of people sharing their common stories will break that isolation and begin the process of restoring healthy and balanced lives. In our last episode of Breakthrough, we discussed what bipolar disorder is and how to identify it from a more clinical standpoint. Today, we're going forward to talk with two people with bipolar disorder who have volunteered to share their stories with you, with the hope that you'll be inspired to better understand bipolar and to be moved, if needed, to take action against this potentially fatal mental illness. Joining me today from Georgia is Lily. Lily is a married, stay-at-home mother of two young boys, ages 8 and 12, and she has been diagnosed with bipolar 1 disorder, and she's here today to share the full breadth of her story and inspire you to understand this disorder more deeply. From Georgia, Lily, welcome to Breakthrough.
Thank you. Happy to be here.
And also joining me from Connecticut is Brianna. Brianna is 26 years old. She's in a long-term committed relationship and works as a patient care technician. She was recently diagnosed with bipolar 2 disorder, and she'll tell us a little bit more as we go forward about what that particularly means. From Connecticut, welcome, Brianna, to Breakthrough.
Thank you. It's really good to be here.
Both Brianna and Lily recently submitted their stories to the Bipolar Network, along with other people from around the country. And I do want to thank everyone who participated at both bipolarnetwork.com and the Bipolar Network Facebook page. First of all, Lily, feel free to share with us an introduction to your story.
Yeah, I'm not sure where to begin. In terms of being diagnosed, it was actually quite a few years ago, and the doctors actually thought that I was suffering from postpartum depression for the longest time, And it actually, it didn't actually come out until my second son was born. And, you know, I might have had it all along, but it actually reared its ugly head, if you will, after my second son was born and actually started becoming more symptomatic. I started having kind of doubts as to what was wrong with me. I didn't really know what was wrong, but I knew something was wrong, and it was more than depression at that time. You know, I would go from 0 to 60 in a matter of seconds. I'd be happy one moment or just kind of, you know, just feeling normal, and then just fits of rage, just for no apparent reason. I'd just go into these bursts of anger, really for no reason sometimes. And it was almost like there's no shut-off valve. I couldn't control it. Couldn't turn it off. And it was really an emotional roller coaster for myself as well as my family. And it really threatened my marriage at times in the beginning. And I didn't know what was wrong with me. I really actually thought I was crazy. I thought I was going crazy. And it was very isolating. And I kept a lot of it to myself because it was scary. And I didn't know what to do with it. A lot of emotions. It was scary, and I didn't know what was wrong with me.
And you said this followed the birth of your first child? Is that what I heard you correctly?
Actually, my second child is when it really came out. After my first son, I was suffering from deep depression, postpartum depression. Mm-hmm. And then after the birth of my second child, I started having these irrational, this irrational behavior. And I know it runs in my family, and it tends to, from what the doctor said, sometimes skips a generation. I assume that this can happen, and it does run in my family. And I had very, very stressful, physically and emotionally stressful premature births with both my sons. And so my doctor at the time thought it was just lying dormant, and it just came out after the second one.
How old were you when you had your first child?
33 and then 37. So they're okay. 4 years apart.
Okay. And you said that as you look back, you may have had experiences of bipolar throughout your life.
Yeah, I was diagnosed with ADHD as a child, but I would have bursts, probably outbursts, when I was young, and I know that they, you know, sometimes I guess ADHD can it sometimes resemble bipolar. You know, when you're younger, and you sometimes can be misdiagnosed, from what I understand. It can be along the same lines when you can have rages at times.
Yes.
From what I believe, I would get very moody and have terrible tempers when I was young. So perhaps I had it all along and I didn't know it, and it just came out further when I had my children.
Did you take medication then for ADHD as a child as well?
I did, yes. I was on Ritalin.
Mm-hmm.
Uh-huh.
How did Ritalin make you feel then, back then, as you recall?
Very comatose.
Oh, really?
They gave me very strong doses back in the early 70s when no one really knew much about it. And I was very tranquilized quite a bit. I don't remember a whole lot of my childhood, but I know I was in trouble a lot, always being disciplined and in trouble a lot, and just a troublemaker, and always told that I had a terrible temper. So it could have been all along, you know, and I just wasn't diagnosed properly.
And then as you had the birth of your first child, you went through a period of depression, and you didn't recognize, of course, at that time that there was anything that could look like mania, which is the other side of bipolar. Is that correct?
Right. I didn't recognize that at the time. I just knew I was deeply, deeply depressed, and I didn't recognize the manic symptoms until my second son was born. And that's when it seemed to really, really come out.
So these shifts in hormones that are generally associated, I know, with certainly with childbirth and as your body tries to restore itself, really brought out some of those symptoms for you, didn't they?
Oh, yes, absolutely. Absolutely.
And so some of those rages and periods of irritability that you experienced, as you recall now looking back as a child, became, I'm sure, more problematic now as a mother of two children, a wife, and somebody that carried so much responsibility at that point.
Oh, yes. Oh, yes. And they became more pronounced, I believe. I mean, it's with all, yes, you're right, with the added pressure of taking care of children and being a wife, it became unbearable at times. And like I said, I thought I was going crazy, and I didn't know what was wrong with me. But it was very obvious to me that it was much more than just depression. And probably having two children made it more, obvious.
And I want to talk a little bit more then about how you discovered that this was bipolar, but I also want to bring in Brianna from Connecticut. And Brianna, could you introduce yourself and your story a little bit here?
Yeah, my name is Brianna, obviously. And I actually grew up in Utah. I've lived in Connecticut for about 2 years. I was just recently, I'd say within the past month and a half, diagnosed with bipolar type 2 disorder. And what prompted me to go and seek treatment, I kind of had what I would call a psychotic episode. I was hallucinating and getting agitated and anxious for no reason. But we'll just skip back a little bit. To when I was younger, I was misdiagnosed as a teenager with severe depression, but it wasn't all the time. I put me on Wellbutrin, Celexa, various different antidepressants, never getting the desired results. And throughout my early 20s, I, again, was having a hard time understanding how I was feeling, understanding what made me tick. So it actually drove me to substance abuse. For about a year, I was addicted to methamphetamine. And
how old were you at the time?
24. So, yeah, I was 24. For about a year, I was addicted, and it seemed to control a lot of my depressive symptoms. So I know I didn't feel down, but I felt more manic all the time, which what I've noticed with my bipolar type 2 is kind of sometimes a good thing. I'm more productive. I have more ambition. I have more drive to achieve my goals, whereas when I'm depressive, I don't have any ambition. I don't have any energy. I don't want to do anything at all.
So is it safe to say that your meth use was sort of a way to keep you in that manic state all the time?
I would say that's pretty much why. I didn't understand it at the time because I had no inkling whatsoever that I might have bipolar disorder or any other psychological disorder. I just thought that I just wanted to be happy. And at the time, that's what did it for me. I cleaned up because I hit rock bottom, and I cleaned up, and my symptoms came back in full force, my depressive symptoms. I was crying for absolutely no reason. I'd be happy enjoying good times with family and friends, and I'd burst out in tears inappropriately. And then my manic symptoms got to the point where I was making irrational decisions, irresponsible decisions. I couldn't trust my own feelings either. I would be irritated with my boyfriend, who had done absolutely nothing whatsoever for me to be irritated with them. Go ahead.
And Brianna, we're up against a break. I want to take that short break, and I'd love to come back and talk a little bit more about how the emergence of this disorder after your sobriety affected your relationship. So we'll do that in just a moment after a short break. I will return with Brianna and Lily, guests of mine who come by way of the Bipolar Network. From Denver, Colorado, this is Breakthrough. I'm Michael Pippage. Please stay tuned.
what's going on behind the scenes with your favorite Voice America show or host. For the latest news, visit the iRadio blog at iradioblog.com.
If you're looking for answers and solutions, you don't have to look to expensive treatments, consultations, and methods. All you have to do is listen to your connections. Every week, the Dr. Melanie Show will teach you how to do just that. Dr. Melanie Barton will share her gifts and talents and teach you to do the same. And in doing so, find the solutions to the issues in your life that you truly need. You'll learn about holistic and practical health in six key areas. Discover the Dr. Melanie Show, Thursdays at 1 p.m. Eastern Time, 10 a.m. Pacific, on the Voice America Health and Wellness Channel.
Follow the Voice America Talk Radio Network on Twitter. We're at Voice America TRN. You'll get the latest fix on what's happening with our shows, this week's featured guests, and general happenings that you should know about at the Voice America Talk Radio Network. Now you don't have to miss anything when you're away from your home or office. Just go to Twitter.com/VoiceAmericaTRN or follow along with us at Voice America TRN, the Voice America Talk Radio Network. We're on the cutting edge of social media. Can you keep up?
Now you don't have to stay linked to your desktop or laptop. Take Voice America on the go and listen anywhere. Get our mobile app for iPhone, BlackBerry, or Android at the Apple iTunes App Store, BlackBerry App World, or Android Market.
You're listening to Breakthrough with Michael Pipich. You're invited to participate in the discussion on today's program. Please feel free to send an email to Michael at michaelpipich.com. That's Michael at michaelpipich.com. Now, back to Breakthrough.
I'm back with Lily from Georgia and Brianna from Connecticut. They're with me today to talk about their own experiences with bipolar disorder. And Brianna, before the break, you started to tell us about how the symptoms of bipolar 2 begin to emerge and how it affected your relationship with your boyfriend.
Yes. As I was saying before, I would get irritated with my boyfriend for no reason at all. He'd come up to me, tell me that he loved me, give me a hug, and I would be so irritated to the point where I couldn't look at him. And I felt horrible because I love him. We're in a committed relationship, and I didn't want to be near him for no reason at all. And it's really hard for him to understand where I'm coming from when I ask him to give me my space. I don't want to be offensive and hurt his feelings because, in all honesty, he hasn't done anything wrong. It's also a little bit more difficult because he has bipolar type 1. So that's another challenge in itself. We're both trying to figure out how to manage our own disorders and also manage each other's disorders, essentially.
Well, at what point did you both realize that you share the same diagnosis, even though he's one and you're two? I don't know if that makes you ahead of him or he's ahead of you, but when did you both share that together and realize it?
Well, he's known most of his life. He was diagnosed when he was younger. And, like I said, I was more recently diagnosed. I noticed some of the symptoms that he has, in myself. And that was also part of what prompted me to seek treatment. He also has ADHD on top of that. So, it really is kind of hard to manage sometimes. He gets these grandiose ideas. I get grandiose ideas. We have to remind ourselves that we're making all these plans, but tomorrow we might not. It might not be the same plan tomorrow. We don't.
So he was instrumental in kind of discovering some of these symptoms and trying to let you know that hey, you might have the same thing he has.
Yes, exactly. He brought to light my instability with my emotions, maybe the fact that I'm not quite as approachable at certain times, and that I take my anger out on him when it's not necessarily warranted. So
I wanted to ask you, how did you respond when he first brought this to your attention? I mean, did you greet it pretty openly, or was there a resistance to it at first?
Well, we have a pretty open relationship as far as communication goes, and we try to speak to each other in a non-critical way. That's the only way that we can communicate. So I was pretty open to what he had to say, and I greeted that with more of an open mind than anything. And he has been completely supportive in my treatment, and he's been more than supportive in reminding me to take my medication. And he's really my rock sometimes, and at other times, he's like the worst thing for me. That makes sense, right?
Well, I think what you're suggesting, worst thing for you, in the sense that if he's struggling with his disorder, sort of equal at a time when you're struggling with yours, that you both don't have the resources that you need to be supportive and caring for each other, and you're both seeking that support. And if you're doing it equally at the same time, well, that must be difficult.
It really is difficult at times. You know, it really is trying, but it really also strengthens our relationship, because if we can battle this disorder together, you know, it's a lot easier than doing it on your own. Having a support group, that's probably the most important thing, so you don't feel alone, so you don't feel like you're going crazy, so you don't feel like you're the only one that this is happening to.
And Lily, how did you discover that you had the diagnosis of bipolar?
Well, like I said, I thought I was just all alone and no one understood me, and just very isolated. And it was really strange. I was at a friend's wedding up in Massachusetts, and it was actually shortly after my second son was born, and I flew into a total rage that made no sense, and all my friends thought I was just, you know, what was wrong, and they talked to my husband and said, you know, she really needs to see a doctor. And at that point, you know, I didn't think much of it. I thought it was just still the postpartum depression, but they kind of, you know, thought there was something going on, and I kind of pushed it aside. But deep down, I thought, you know, I still kind of felt there's something really wrong, but I kind of pushed it aside. And then I knew there's something wrong when my husband and I got into it about the paint color, choosing the paint color of our house, and we were talking calmly, and all of a sudden, I don't know what got into me. I just got really angry, and I threw the paint at him, not at him, but next to him, and I thought, what did I do that for? And then I started crying hysterically. And the next, within like 60 seconds, I was like, no, I'm fine. And I said, just take the kids and go. Just get away from me. I'm going to be fine. And I tried to talk him into leaving, because I knew I was going to hurt myself. And I got into such a deep, dark place. And I didn't know how, but I wanted to end my life. It was really scary, because it was just, that's how the roller coaster was, back and forth. It was just, that was it. You know, I didn't know how or what was going to happen. And then the next second, I said, no, I've got to go with you. And it was just, that's how fast my emotions would change. And I got into the car, and I just burst into tears again. And you know, it was insane. And then for some reason, it was crazy. I don't watch TV much, and I happened to turn on the TV, and Dr. Phil, of all things, came on, and there was a show where a woman was on, and she happened to have bipolar disorder, and she was in a lot of pain, and her two sons were struggling, and they were very upset, and they couldn't deal with their mother, the way she was and the way she was behaving. And she was causing all kinds of pain around her with her family, and the way she would switch from one mood to the next, just the drop of a pin. And I sat there, and my jaw dropped, and I thought, oh, my God, this is me. This is what I have. I just knew in my heart of hearts that you know, this has got to be it. And I felt like, oh my gosh, I'm not alone. There's an answer. There's a reason. I'm not crazy. And so I was the doctor I was seeing for who knew me for 11 years. I know this can't be something. I guess it's diagnosed overnight. He had helped me through all the pregnancies and the depression and all of that. My husband and I went to see him, and he kind of said, well, I know you don't like to be on a lot of medications, but I kind of suspected there was something more to it than the depression. And, you know, I knew that the way you would, you know, kind of get into these moods, you know, I suspected that there was something more to it than this. And we all talked, and my husband talked to him about what kind of moods I was in and how I, you know, jumped from one to another. And that's when he said, yeah, I think we do definitely have something more going on than just this postpartum that we've been kidding ourselves with for so long. And that's when we started on the medication at that point.
And going back just a second, Lily, when you mentioned right after the wedding or shortly thereafter, you had an episode where you were thinking about suicide. Is that correct?
Yeah, I did.
Yeah.
Actually, I had two incidences.
Right. And was that the first time that you ever had such an intense thought about suicide?
It was. It was the very first time. And it was, I would never, ever want my worst enemy to ever be in that kind of situation. It's the deepest, darkest, it wasn't even like, I don't know, it was the darkest depression you could ever imagine when you actually think of wanting to take your own life and you don't know how, and it was just, it was so dark. And you know, and the worst thing about it was one minute you're fine, and the next minute you're screaming, and the next minute you're crying, and it's just, it's so scary. And you think, oh my gosh, something's wrong with me, I've gone mad. And I further started to withdraw myself from all of my friends. I couldn't trust myself with anyone. You know, because I even my best friends, I thought I can't do this, and I don't know what I'm going to do next, and I can't trust being with anyone because you know you don't know what's going to come out of you. It's like this deep dark secret that you don't want anyone to know, and you pretend to be happy when you have to go out in situations, and it just took so much energy.
And Brianna, you mentioned a moment ago about feeling like you hit bottom as well, correct?
Yes. I feel like I've felt like that I've hit bottom. Like Lily, I have had those suicidal thoughts where I just want to end my life for no particular reason other than I don't want to feel this way anymore. It just really is the darkest place. And like Lily was saying, I isolate myself. My boyfriend will try to draw me out and go do activities with our friends, and I'll just sit at home and I'll get stuck in my own head, and it's a vicious cycle. You get stuck in your own head, you overanalyze things, you make yourself more depressed, therefore you don't go outside, and again you get stuck inside your own head. So it really is a tough cycle to break.
Mm-hmm. You're right, Brianna, and I would sit and just, I don't know about you, but I would just sit and cry literally for hours and hours. And I had the two children to take care of, and my husband would travel internationally a lot. And it was just a desperate thing because it was like, how do I take care of these children when I can't even take care of myself, you know? And
exactly.
And you don't want to bother people. You don't want to, you know what I mean? You would hide, and you don't want to bring people into your own deep world. You know what I mean? You don't want to bring people down, you know?
Exactly.
But it's a terrible, terrible place to be in.
Yeah. And when we come back after a break, ladies, I want to move the conversation, of course, from that place of the bottom and feeling like life could never get better, that you're at the lowest of lows, and how you began to emerge from that to where you are today. So before we take a break, I do want to remind you listeners also to visit the website or the Facebook page called Bipolar Network, so you can go to bipolarnetwork.com or put Bipolar Network in the search box on the Facebook page. And please don't forget to like it if you like it. There's a lot of information. There's more stories and opportunity to share and to gain further insight into what you might be struggling with. And you can also access all breakthrough episodes at michaelpipich.com as well. We'll be right back.
Think you've seen everything there is to see in online television? Let us surprise you. Visit voiceamerica.tv today for sports, health, business, and more on demand 24/7. It's a beautiful
day. Do you look your best? Do you feel your best? While everybody ages, why does it seem to show more in some people than others? It could have to do with what's inside and how it affects you outside. Tune in to Health and Beauty for Life with Dr. Tang and Alexandra. Their training in medicine and nutrition brings proven results with their patients. And now, they're ready to bring that knowledge to you. We'll answer your questions and explore innovations in technology and medicine to keep you looking and feeling your best. Tune in Wednesdays at 4 p.m. Pacific, 7 p.m. Eastern on Voice America Health and Wellness.
Want to know what's going on behind the scenes with your favorite Voice America Talk Radio Network host? How about what's new with our network? Make sure you check out the iRadio blog, a look at what's hot at Voice America and beyond. Visit www.iradioblog.com today. Get the inside scoop on every channel on our network, including breaking news, featured guests, blog posts from our hosts, and much more. Make sure you sign up for our newsletter for even more inside action. Visit iradioblog.com today and stay connected.
Be sure to friend us on Facebook. You can do it right now. Visit Facebook.com/Voice America or search for us at keyword Voice America.
You're listening to Breakthrough with Michael Pipich. You're invited to participate in the discussion on today's program. Please feel free to send an email to Michael@MichaelPipich.com. That's Michael@MichaelPipich.com. Now, back to Breakthrough.
Welcome back. I'm talking today with friends from the Bipolar Network, Lily from Georgia and Brianna from Connecticut. And Lily, before the break, you were talking about how far down you got into depression and even thought about suicide and how very dark and deep that was for you. At what point did you feel like things were going to start coming up for you and that there was something that you could actually hope for to improve within yourself?
Well, I had really great hope once I finally went to my doctor and realized that there was a name for this. And he said, yep, we can do something about this. And he said, you know, there's a medication that, you know, will take away, you know, it'll even you out and pretty much it isn't like some of them will, you know, because you have the highs and the bipolar, and the highs certainly are, that's the one thing I really didn't like, because I didn't want my highs to go away. The highs are wonderful, but, you know, because you're creative and you think you're invincible, but at the same time you realize, you know, it's a sacrifice because you can't keep hurting the people around you. So as much as you don't want to flatten out, and that's a tough one, you realize that, you know, there is a life for you, and he put me on one that pretty much, he said, this will even you out, and you won't have these major mood swings. You certainly won't have this deep depression, and it's literally saved my life. It's been the best thing ever for my family and myself and the boys and my husband, and it's saved our marriage as well, because we were, that was a really scary time for us.
Wow. How much time did it take for the medication really to have that stabilizing effect for you?
I would say within a matter of a few weeks, it started to work. And within, I'd say, 7 to 8 weeks, it was fully up. And I started to notice the difference within a few weeks. And I'd say 7 to 8 weeks, it was fully up to the dose where it was wonderful. It was like, you know, I was feeling like a normal person and didn't feel crazy anymore, and I started to get out in life again, and it was great. It was just, it's like I said, it saved my life, and I'm so grateful for it, because things wouldn't be today the way they are without it. So it's been the best thing in the world.
And what about for you, Brianna? I know you mentioned about your boyfriend and how he's been such a big part of you being able to find the beginning of your recovery. At what point did you recognize that treatments and therapies and the sort of kind of activities necessary to treat this problem was central in your life and could have that positive effect?
Well, like I said, with the recent diagnosis, we are currently trying a medication, and within a week, I would say I noticed a positive change in my general outlook. My moods were a little bit more stabilized and more positive. My outlook is more positive now, but I'm still struggling with the medication. We're trying to work the kinks out.
Do you still struggle with hallucinations?
No, I actually have not had hallucinations since the one night that prompted me to get treatment.
And you were were you still on meth at that time? Or
no, actually, I've been clean and sober for about 2 years now. But I don't know exactly what triggered it. I know that I felt like I was going into a low a couple hours before it happened. But other than that, there was no predicting that would happen. And I'm lucky that it hasn't happened again. I'm glad that it hasn't happened again. But like I said, the medication that I'm on is supposed to control hallucinations, also control agitation, anxiety, such as that. But like I said, there's a couple kinks that we still need to work out.
So. Is it fair to say to both of you ladies that you really miss the manic episodes? I know that as a therapist myself, and certainly a lot of the information that I get from other people dealing with this disorder, is that very often that's the one thing that they wish they could just hold on to. And do you feel the same way, both of you?
Yes.
Yes, absolutely. It's like a high. It's hard to explain.
But actually, it is really like a high. You feel great. You feel happy. You're, like Lily was saying, you're creative, and everybody's just so happy to be around you because you're practically the life of the party.
Yeah, you are, and you feel invincible, really, right, Brianna? I mean, someone could drop a bomb next to you, and it's like it wouldn't bother you. I don't know how
exactly.
to describe it.
My self-confidence goes through the roof.
Yep, yep, yes, you know, absolutely.
Go ahead, Brianna. No, please, go ahead.
I feel like I can do no wrong, you know, and sometimes that gets me in trouble. But generally,
I agree. Except I got into trouble. I mean, sometimes it's not a good thing in the sense that I don't know how far you went, Brianna, but I remember once. I mean, I went on a shopping spree, and I spent a couple $1,000 in a day. I thought I was like this super rich person, which I'm not, and you know, I don't even work. You know, I'm a stay-at-home mom, and I went out, and I thought I was some I don't know who, and I bought a huge wardrobe for myself and my husband, and a couple $1,000s. And the next day, I had to go and return it. My husband's like, "What happened?" And so, I mean, I would do things like that that I guess were not very rational, but you know, at the time, it felt great, you know, and. Yeah, so you feel like you're the most popular person, and you know, nothing can bring you down. You've got these great bursts of energy, and
I'm wondering, Lily, when your husband said, you know, what happened, and was shocked to see all of this stuff. I mean, did you immediately realize what you had done, or did it take some time for you to kind of come to your senses?
Yeah, it took some time. I was like, well. I said, what? I had fun. I said, I met my friend for lunch. We had fun, and we had some wine. And I said, and I went shopping. I said, look what I got you. Look what I got me. And I said, we have new wardrobes. And I didn't even get it at the time. It didn't dawn on me. I need to kind of bring me down to earth.
And you were going to say something, Brianna?
Yeah, it's exactly the same situation. Well, not exactly the same situation, but I'll get into, and when I'm in my highs, I'll get into these debates where everything I know is right, and then that will project me into like a manic where I'm agitated and angry, and I can hear nothing. that anybody's trying to say. But, I mean, the highs are so great, but I'm coming to realize that the consequences of the highs aren't necessarily the greatest. So I'm having a little bit of trouble trying to understand that within myself, that I want to be in this high, happy state, but the consequences that come with it, whether they're worth it or not.
So much like dealing with the addiction itself, Brianna, it's important, I guess, to remind yourself on a regular basis of what those consequences look like.
Yeah, it's important to do that, but sometimes it's really hard to even see the consequences because you're so focused on having a good time and being this great person that in your mind at the time that you think you are.
Yep.
That you think that you are top dog and you can do no wrong.
I agree. Lily? You think you're the most popular person in the world and everybody loves you and your self-confidence is so up there and you think you can do anything.
Mm-hmm. Lily, have you gone into therapy for this condition as well as taking medicines?
Therapy as well as medicine, yes. Uh-huh. Yep.
And how long have you been going to therapy sessions, if you're still going?
About 2 years, and it's been really helpful. It's been really helpful.
Could you take the next minute or two and just kind of give us an overview of the kinds of things you present in therapy and how that's been helpful for you to kind of control this condition?
Well, more or less to try to help me to realize that, you know, just to work on my self-confidence and to realize that, you know, to help me deal with my past that I think, you know, kind of has interfered with my self-confidence and inability to see. I think that's been a lot of my problem. You know, I've in terms of like the highs, I've always felt like I've needed these highs to be accepted, if you will. And I think realizing, getting over some of the things in my childhood, my past, it's been really helpful. To have therapy. And also, I mean, you realize, you know, you have the medication and that's wonderful and it's great, but it can't fix everything, you know, and you have to work on yourself as well. And you have to realize that, you know, you can be in control of your mood to a certain point. You can help yourself out. There are things you can do, you know, relaxation techniques, And you can't just expect a pill to fix it. You know, you can take walks, you can be active, you can try to get into support groups, which I did at a certain point in time. But then I realized, you know, I try to get out and exercise more and try to be healthier. And you know, outlets. There are a lot of outlets that you can focus on instead of just thinking, oh, the medicine will help. You know, it'll take away everything. You know.
So it's not just about learning how to deal with your life. Obviously, very important to understand certain triggers that you need to look at from a behavioral standpoint. But like you had mentioned, Lily, and Brianna, it sounds similar in the sense that you both have struggled through your childhood years from this condition. It is genetic, and it is based in your brain. So it certainly can be something you've carried through your whole life. And you, I guess, Lily, are saying that you look at the whole breadth of your life and how you've dealt with yourself and other people in situations to give yourself a better insight into dealing with your life going forward.
Yes, and also, I mean, I think what I've worked through with therapy is I used to hate myself for it, and I used to feel guilty about the people around me, like my husband and I used to say, God, I hate that you got stuck with me with this problem and you could have been so much better off. And I don't want the children growing up thinking that their mommy's sick. And I used to feel like I was mommy dearest at times before, you know, before the medication and not quite that bad. But, you know, emotionally, I didn't want to be like that. And I didn't want to be this awful person. I realized, you know, it's not my fault. This is genetic. And I can control it, and I do have willpower, and I do have ways of dealing with the triggers, and I realize, like I said, it's not my fault, and it's hereditary, and like you said, we don't bring this upon ourselves, and so we can't hate ourselves for this.
After a break, I'll return with both my guests and also read a letter from another listener from the Bipolar Network as well. And we will then approach our final segment on living with bipolar disorder. So from Denver, Colorado, this is Breakthrough. I'm Michael Pipich, and please stay with us.
Now you don't have to stay linked to your desktop or laptop. Take Voice America on the go and listen anywhere. Get our mobile app for iPhone, BlackBerry, or Android at the Apple iTunes App Store, BlackBerry App World, or Android Market.
Caring for someone with autism can be full of challenges and triumphs. Wherever you are on your autism journey, we all benefit from good information and guidance. Join host Rob Haupt every week for a friendly show that will leave you inspired and informed. Tune in to Autism Spectrum Radio. Our guests include parents, advocates, and experts to discuss current experiences, treatments, and breakthroughs for those living with autism. Listen every Tuesday at 11 a.m. Pacific Time, 2 p.m. Eastern Time on the Voice America Health and Wellness Channel.
Now you don't have to stay linked to your desktop or laptop. Take Voice America on the go and listen anywhere. Get our mobile app for iPhone, BlackBerry, or Android at the Apple iTunes App Store, BlackBerry App World, or Android Market.
You're listening to Breakthrough with Michael Pipich. You're invited to participate in the discussion on today's program. Please feel free to send an email to Michael at michaelpipich.com. That's Michael at michaelpipich.com. Now, back to Breakthrough.
My guests are Brianna from Connecticut and Lily from Georgia. They've come to share their stories by way of the Bipolar Network. Ladies, thank you again for joining us today on Breakthrough.
You're welcome.
Of course.
I got a letter through the Bipolar Network from JM, and she says that she is a 17-year-old female from New Jersey, and I wanted to read this to the two of you and get your insights as well. JM says, I was diagnosed with bipolar disorder 5 months ago officially. Before then, I had a list of things it could be, including depression, anxiety disorder, post-traumatic stress, and borderline personality. Finally, we, meaning therapist, mother, psychiatrist, and herself, decided that bipolar disorder fit whatever it was that was wrong with my brain. She goes on, JM does, to talk about her medical issues, and she says, quote, I have scars on my neck and stomach. When I'm manic, I love them. When I'm depressed, they are hideous reminders of how God didn't love me enough to make me whole. At age 14, she goes on to talk about her medical problems, and then it says at age at 14, it had set her into a spiral of a mixed state. JM says that summer I started smoking marijuana daily, experimenting with pills and drinking. I got in a slight altercation with the cops. Luckily, I had no legal trouble. I've been on 4 different medications since I was 13. School has always been difficult for me. I'm not stupid. I'm actually pretty intelligent. Manic says I don't have to do schoolwork because I'm better than that. I don't need it. Depression says, what's the point? You aren't getting into college anyway. I'm young, and being recently diagnosed, I have mixed feelings. Some days I don't mind it. Others, I hate it. I take each day one day at a time. Can I ask you first, Brianna, your reaction to JM's story?
My first reaction is I completely can identify with her feelings. That pretty much described me as a teenager. I've always been really intelligent, high IQ, but I never did any schoolwork because I thought I was smarter than that. And then there were days when I'm like, why even bother? You're too stupid to even do it. And with the drug use, I completely identify. Throughout my teenage years, I experimented with various things, trying to feel quote-unquote normal. So I can completely identify with everything that she had to say.
And for you, Brianna, Was it particular situations or just a lapse of time between when you were feeling as a student that you were smarter than everybody else and above doing homework and so forth, to that it was all hopeless anyway? Again, was there a breadth of time in there that caused that change, or events in between?
It wasn't necessarily events in between. It would be like the writer JM was saying, one day you'd feel completely smart and no point in doing it because you're too smart for it. And then the next day you feel like, oh, I'm so stupid. Why am I even trying? It wasn't necessarily events that led up to it. It just depends on the day.
And when you started to use drugs as a teenager, did you ever have something like a thought at the time when you first started that you had finally found something that was going to help you through life? Or was it just a sense of immediate relief?
I think it was more a sense of instant gratification, where I felt normal. It was kind of the miracle cure, quote unquote. And I don't want to condone drug use to any of the listeners or anything, but for me, that's what it felt like at the time.
Yes.
I didn't necessarily relate it to necessarily being I didn't relate it to being something that I was using because I felt poorly. It was just an instant gratification, and I felt normal, and it worked for me.
Right, and so it's something like self-medication, then, isn't it? Wasn't it for you?
It was more self-medicating, and I didn't quite know what I was self-medicating. I thought that I was just doing it because my friends were, and.
Right.
I honestly 100% believe that everyone who uses is using because there is something going on deep down. It's not that they just want to have a good time. That's usually how it starts, or so you think. But there is an underlying issue that needs to be dealt with. And for me, it was bipolar disorder.
And Lily, what is your reaction to JM's story?
I totally understand what Jan's struggle and feeling at times wanting to give up and what's the use. But I think that when I felt like that, once the medication, and once it gets, straightened out, you realize that, we have this and it's not going away. And it's going to be there, and we're going to have to embrace it. I mean, it's part of, unfortunately, who we are, and it's something that we can let it victimize us, or we can just say, you know what, yep, this is it. I'm stuck with it, and I'm going to do the best I can with it, and I'm going to fight this thing, and I'm going to learn how to live with it and how to deal with it. And do the best I can with it, and I'm going to live the most productive life I can with this disorder. And I guess at some point you have to choose to not let it take your life away,
And I know that you relate, I'm sure, personally with JM's story, but also now as a mother, there may be even more of an urgency, I'm sure, that you feel to make sure that she gets the help that she needs and continues down a path of health and stability for her life as well.
Yeah, she's got her whole life ahead of her, and to let this thing take it away is just, it would be she's bigger than this disease, and she can do it. She can do it.
I agree completely. She is not. A bipolar disorder does not define who she is.
No.
She happens to have a disorder, but that's not who she is. And there's so much hope left for her. There's so many solutions out there. And my only suggestion is keep on with the therapy and keep on with the medication and keep growing as a person. And that's really what's going to help her in the long run.
Yep.
Ladies and gentlemen, the website is bipolarnetwork.com and the Bipolar Network on Facebook. Lily from Georgia and Brianna from Connecticut, thank you for joining me today. Thank you for graciously sharing your personal stories. I'm sure I speak with, or rather I speak for the listeners in wishing you and your families the very best for your future.
Oh, thank you. It's been a pleasure.
Thank you very much. It has been.
Thank you. And don't forget to check out michaelpipich.com for more information about on-demand programs. Have a great summer vacation. Make some beautiful memories. I'll be back with more programs this coming fall. This has been Breakthrough. I'm Michael Pipich. I'll see you soon.
Thanks for tuning in to Breakthrough with host Michael Pipich. Please join Michael again next Thursday at 12 noon Eastern Time, 9 a.m. Pacific Time on the Voice America Health and Wellness Channel. We hope you have a great week. Thanks again for listening to the preceding program brought to you on the Voice America Health and Wellness Channel. For more information about our network and to check out additional show hosts and topics of interest, please visit voiceamericahealth.com. The Voice America Talk Radio Network is the worldwide leader in live internet talk radio. Visit voiceamerica.com. The views and ideas expressed on the preceding program are strictly those of the host or guests and do not necessarily reflect the views and ideas held by the Voice America Talk Radio Network, its staff, and management.